We're a single site organization in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we draw clients from four surrounding states. I guess what I most hope is that we give information out that gives answers to how to help people.
One of the things that we actually don't see is this type of organizing with this many East and Southeast Asians together and South Asians together. It's quite revolutionary.
I just enjoy like meeting other queer Asians and just being in a space with so many queer Asians.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Australian bishops lose their bid to limit lesbian baby making, Pittsburgh's Prasad puts mental health on the gay agenda, and Lotus Roots inspire a North American queer Asian conference. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 20th, 2002. Lesbians and other women not in relationships with men retain their right to assisted reproduction treatment in Australia, as the nation's High Court this week unanimously dismissed a legal challenge by the Australian Catholic Bishops' Conference. The court criticized the Attorney General for granting the bishops the chance to appeal a case to which the church had not been a party. In that case, non-gay Lisa Meldrum won a federal court ruling in 2000 that struck down Victoria's state law limiting access to fertility treatment exclusively to women in relationships with men, finding the state law violated the National Sex Discrimination Act. The High Court's action this week preserved that decision. But politics still threaten equal access to fertility treatment. Prime Minister John Howard has indicated that his coalition government could move quickly to amend the Sex Discrimination Act to allow states to limit access. The coalition had introduced a bill to that effect in the wake of the federal court decision, and it passed the House only to die in a Senate committee. A vote in the Senate could now be very close. Although the opposition parties all support equal access to treatment, some individual Australian Labor Party senators disagree, and the bill will pass if just two abstain.
Another high court dismissal this week was much less welcome to the lesbian gay community, as Texas' top criminal appeals court declined to take up a case of two men arrested in one's private home under the state's gay-only sodomy law. Sheriff's deputies were responding to a third party's false report of an intruder on the premises in 1998 when they discovered John Lawrence and Tyrone Gardner engaged in consensual sex. Both men had pleaded no contest and paid a fine, hoping they could strike down the so-called homosexual conduct law in the appellate courts. With the support of the Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund, the men are now considering an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Kansas and Oklahoma are the only states besides Texas that retain sodomy statutes applying solely to homosexual acts, although a court ruling against Arkansas's law is still pending appeal. 10 other states have laws prohibiting oral and anal sex, regardless of the gender of the parties involved. Civil lawsuits challenging the Texas law have failed. Last year, one mid-level state appeals court ruled in favor of the law. The state's top civil court, the Texas Supreme Court, declined to hear a 1998 case on the basis that the law's status should be determined by the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, the court that refused to hear the challenge this week.
An Egyptian appeals court last week completely overturned the convictions of the so-called Dahmanur Five gay men, raising hopes for an indeterminate number of other Egyptian gay men in custody. The GayEgypt.com website believes the decision was ordered by President Hosni Mubarak in the wake of U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell's visit, public criticism by French President Jacques Chirac of Egypt's recent crackdown on gays, and other international protests. However, fears remain that arrests of gays will continue in Egypt, but under cover of media silence. At last report, the Dahmanur defendants had not been released. They've been in jail since January, where they say they were tortured into confessing, and were convicted in March of debauchery charges and sentenced to 3 years imprisonment, followed by 3 years probation.
An Australian bisexual was released from custody last week with a suspended sentence after pleading guilty to assisting the suicide of his ex-lover, who had HIV. Melbourne Supreme Court Justice John Coldry said he did not think prison was necessary for Raymond Hood, who aided the April 2000 suicide of Daryl Colley. Drag artist Colley was reportedly obsessed with the film It's My Party and, like its gay hero with AIDS, held a party with some 70 guests to say goodbye before taking a fatal drug overdose. Colley announced that he had inoperable brain tumors that would leave him a vegetable, although no tumors were found on autopsy. Hood's attorney called his client's actions both courageous and an act of love, but Justice Coldry said that it was misplaced courage and misguided love.
In Britain, a male couple this week became the first to sign Manchester's new partner union registry. The official registration is largely ceremonial, although the leader of Manchester City Council expressed hopes that someday it will carry legal rights, including recognition as next of kin. Manchester is only the second city in the UK to offer a domestic partners registry following London, where couples first registered in September.
Cleveland Heights is ready to become the first city in the U.S. state of Ohio to extend health benefits to the same-gender partners of its gay and lesbian municipal employees. Despite strong protest from religious right activists, the city council this week gave its final approval by a vote of 6-1 to a measure the mayor strongly supports. Opponents are circulating petitions for a repeal referendum, something which has never happened before in the city's 80-year history. If they fail to collect enough signatures to block the ordinance, Cleveland Heights workers could be signing up for the benefits by the end of May.
A Nebraska bill to prohibit workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation died this week, but not quietly. It took nearly a decade to reach the floor of the state's unicameral legislature, but was disposed of there in only 15 minutes. Senator from Lincoln Mike Foley offered 20 amendments and threatened to filibuster until midnight to kill the bill, but instead the legislature voted to adjourn and the speaker will not reschedule discussion of the bill. Senator from Omaha Ernie Chambers, a longtime champion of equal treatment for gays and lesbians, vowed to bring the bill back, but also went one step further. Outraged that his colleagues had given such an important issue such short shrift, he punished them with a filibuster of his own the next day, speaking from 9 a.m. into the early evening with just one 15-minute break. With its session drawing to a close, the legislature had expected to deal with some 24 bills that day, but instead was brought to a standstill.
In Illinois, a Democratic candidate for the U.S. Congress has publicly identified himself as a gay man. Hank Parrott's announcement was no big surprise since he's been living with a male partner for 17 years. The first-time political candidate said, "One of the things that defines me is that I'm gay, but I'm also a law school dean, an engineer, I worked on the White House staff, and I spent time in Bosnia and Kosovo. I'm running as a total package, and I decided many years ago not to hide who I am, and that's part of it." Parrott's fundraising lags far behind that of his opponent, gay-friendly Republican Representative Mark Kirk, who won his first term in 2000 with only 51% of the vote.
Canada's first openly gay member of parliament, Sven Robinson, was stripped this week of his role as the New Democratic Party's spokesperson on foreign affairs because of his support of the Palestinians. NDP leader Alexa McDonough said she'll take over those duties herself to promote what she called the party's long-standing balanced position, which supports the right of Israel to exist within secure borders and the right of Palestinians to a homeland. Robinson had said, "Yes, I'm taking sides. I'm taking the side of peace over war. I'm taking the side of the oppressed over the oppressor, the side of justice over tyranny." He described the actions of both Palestinian suicide bombers and the Israeli military as terrorism.
In the terrorist hijacking of Flight 93 on September 11th, open gay Mark Bingham's hero role was confirmed this week. The United Airlines Newark to San Francisco flight crashed in rural Pennsylvania, killing all on board but sparing any others as passengers and crew fought back against the terrorists who took control of the plane. It has been widely believed from the first that Bingham played a key leadership role in the actions that kept the plane from reaching the terrorists' intended target for destruction. This week, for the first time in any plane crash, the U.S. government allowed surviving family members to listen to the cockpit recordings from Flight 93. Although they were not allowed to speak freely to reporters because of a pending trial, by their reports, the tapes appeared to confirm that Bingham was a leader of the counterattack and did nothing to contradict that impression. His mother, Alice Hoagland, herself a United Airlines flight attendant, gave all 40 passengers and crew credit for an heroic teamwork effort.
And finally, GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, distributed its annual media awards this week in the second of four ceremonies, including a fourth Outstanding Comedy Series trophy for NBC's Will and Grace. Accepting the award, Canadian actor Eric McCormick, who stars as openly gay attorney Will, said, "This is an incredible honor. When a straight person comes up to me and says, 'I love the show,' I say thank you. But when a gay man comes up to me and says, 'I love the show,' I know that he's coming on to me. I say thank you and I make out with him, but only for a minute, no longer, because I am straight."
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 20th, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Some 200 queer Asians and Pacific Islanders recently went digging together for their cultural, spiritual, and political lotus roots. They found a source of pride and inspiration. You'll hear varied voices from their emotionally charged conference later in the program. When Betty Hill assumed the role of executive director of the Persaud Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania last year, she took the helm of one of the oldest organizations in the U.S., providing mental health services to sexual minority communities. As Persaud celebrates its 30th anniversary this year, This Way Out correspondent Joe Ress chats with Hill about the group's continuing evolution.
We started out sort of as a general counseling center, and then several other things have happened with that. We learned a lot about folks who had gender confusion or gender dysphoria, so we started our transgender services to respond to their needs as a specialty population. In the 80s, when AIDS came along, and at that point it was primarily a gay male problem, Persaud took a leadership role in the community to create the AIDS Service Organization Network that responds to the needs of folks who are HIV or AIDS. More recently, we've added a program for domestic partner abuse, and that's for couples who are in abusive relationships and who may actually escalate to violence. And what we found is that the usual programs for domestic violence that are used to dealing with heterosexual couples do not fit our population. And the local magistrates were seeing our folks in their courtrooms and sort of scratching their heads and saying, "Ooh, now what do? We have programs for heterosexual people, but we're not even sure which one of them to send to it because we don't know who's the abuser and who's doing what to who." So we've created this program that speaks to that problem in a way that fits our population. So our calling card, we believe, is to remain cutting edge. So the kinds of things that are affecting gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people, we have to stay on top of those and ahead of the curve.
You've been an organization that has had to grow and respond to changing times and changing needs. But it sounds to me like you're still a unique organization. There's not a lot of Persaud Center-like organizations that are providing the services.
We're a single-site organization in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we draw clients from four surrounding states because the service doesn't exist there. So because there aren't Persauds everywhere, but there are gay people everywhere, then some of the other organizations serving people need to learn how to address our populations. And we think we can play a role in that in a teaching way. We also think that we'd like to draw some lines between us and some of those other pocket organizations that are out there and try to start comparing our experiences and building a relationship with them so that if we do a piece of, say, research here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but there's also a research going on at the Gay and Lesbian Community Center in Los Angeles, if we could look at the same things and put that information together, then it becomes even more meaningful and can stretch across the country.
In the time since September 11th, mental health providers around the country have seen an increase in demand for services. And I'm wondering if Persaud has seen anything unique to the sexual minority community in terms of needs for counseling.
I think everybody right now is feeling a little bit unsafe, and their security has been rocked. But gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people are marginalized in society anyway. So they already, in their lifetime and in their experiences, have a high amount of negative things happen and a high amount of insecurity and a high amount of fear. There is also a tendency after a national tragedy for there to be an increase in substance abuse. People use substances sometimes as coping, or they try to numb their symptoms through the use of substances.
Which I think leads to a question about risk behaviors, because the story seems to go that with an increase in substance abuse, there's an increase in other risky behaviors. And I'm wondering if you're starting to see any kind of ripple effect after September 11th that indicates an increase in sexually transmitted diseases.
We're anticipating a spike in the STDs, but there is a really long-term effect to trauma and to crisis that we need to sustain our support to people over time. That for the next 5 to 10 years, in fact, we may see gradual increases in the need for substance abuse services and mental health services. And one of the things that's troubling to an organization like ours is that when we look at the information from other areas of the country that have had trauma or other places in the world, that while there's this increase in the need for mental health and drug and alcohol services, for the next 5 to 10 years, there tends to be a decrease in funding because resources get diverted to dealing with some of the more concrete aspects of the trauma. I mean, if you think about all the costs that we're creating right now around security, and not that those aren't good things for us to be buying, but that money has to come from somewhere, and it tends to get diverted from other things that the government is supporting. And so that's one of the things that we'll be worrying about.
You talked earlier about the opportunities that exist to strengthen the connections between mental health service providers that serve the sexual minority community. And you talked about a vision for the future that includes using the data gathered at these locations around the country to enhance research that will benefit sexual minorities. What are your overall hopes for that in the near future?
I guess what I most hope is that we give information out that gives answers to how to help people, that makes a meaningful difference. So for example, if we're able to do a research project on our domestic partner abuse program, what we hope is to learn something from that and then be able to teach it in the world that says, when you get folks who are in same-sex couples, who are in abusive relationships, this is how to help them. This is really what works, and we know it because we've looked at this, we've studied it, and we've demonstrated it. So we're becoming more of a proactive part of planning for research and trying to stimulate some of that research happening.
That was Betty Hill, Executive Director of the Prasad Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She spoke with Joe Resch at WYEP-FM.
Hi, this is Ron Romanofsky.
And this is Paul Phillips.
And we're Romanofsky and Phillips. You're listening to This Way Out,
the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
And if we weren't on the radio right now, I'm sure we would be listening.
Vancouver, British Columbia was the site of a special gathering of queer Asians and Pacific Islanders in mid-April called Lotus Roots 2002. When it started in 1996, Lotus Roots was the first such gathering in Western Canada. Now it travels between Vancouver and Seattle and draws delegates from all over North America. Organizers say they welcome anyone who finds themselves under the queer Asian umbrella and that they strive to keep the agenda for the event wide open so that anyone can use it as a forum to pursue their interests and discuss what they need to. Heather Kitching of CITR Vancouver's Queer FM was on scene at this year's Lotus Roots, taking in the event's diverse range of activities.
Welcome to Lotus Roots 2002. It's not every day that you get 200 queer Asians and Pacific Islanders together in one venue for a weekend devoted to the art, culture, and issues of queer API people. Perhaps that's why people came to Vancouver from as far away as New York, Montreal, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C. to participate in Lotus Roots 4, a gathering of queer Asians and Pacific Islanders.
Who in the audience is single? Okay.
The theme of this year's conference was transformation. Conference coordinator Shaha Cocker says the theme speaks to the process of becoming more inclusive of diversity, both as a conference and as a community.
In this community, people have had to fight for their space, and sometimes I think there's a danger of becoming rigid in the definition of what that space means because you've had to fight for it. And so part of it is like this negotiation between respecting that it's been a struggle to have this space and it's very necessary, but also pushing it and really having dialogue to decide how we want this space to expand. And
there have been four Lotus Roots gatherings now. The first was in Vancouver in 1996. The second was also held in Vancouver a year later. The third and most recent Lotus Roots took place in Seattle in 2000. According to Cynthia Lowe, the executive director of the Asian Society for the Intervention of AIDS, or ASIA, the Vancouver organization that sponsors the gathering, the roots of Lotus Roots lie in the prevention of HIV infection.
The objective was to create gay and lesbian space for Asians around vulnerability to HIV. And that's really difficult because although awareness about HIV is very much out there, sort of compliance to safety issues is more about emotional vulnerability, feelings of self-esteem or poor self-esteem, feelings of isolation, feelings like, you know, you can't have sex with anybody unless you don't use a condom, those kinds of issues. So part of the original idea was to incorporate issues of HIV vulnerability in a more holistic manner, talking about community, talking about building.
Lowe says that today's Lotus Roots is still very much about simply creating space where organizers, activists, and artists can come to share their work, discuss issues that are important to them, and go away feeling grounded and affirmed. They don't try to define the agenda too narrowly, and they don't try to be all things to all people. At the beginning of this year's conference, Shaha Cocker asked participants to write down three things they personally hope to get from it. The responses were as diverse as the delegates themselves.
One of them was that I haven't been thinking about is self-identity, and not self-identity as my gay identity, but self-identity as my cultural identity, and trying to get back to my culture, and instead of pushing it away for so many years that I have, but coming back to it and understanding it and accepting it as well.
Just to meet other people, know about other programs and projects throughout Canada and the U.S. dealing with API youth issues, but also, more importantly, just to have a chance to feel empowered as an Asian and as a gay person.
You're the best.
This year's Lotus Roots began on a Friday night with an evening of films, videos, and performances, and some other attractions like a kissing booth. The daytime hours of Saturday and Sunday were spent in conference workshops. There were 27 to choose from, with topics ranging from youth issues to erotic massage.
My name is Romy Chandra, and I'm a youth worker at GAB Youth Services. And I just finished doing a workshop at Lotus Roots Conference. It's called Becoming Who I Am. And a lot of times, we also discussed what coming out means, and is it a Western idea? And we did come up with the idea that no, coming out is not a Western idea, that it is in every culture, but some of the emotions are very different. Really, really wanting our family's acceptance is really high on our priority list of wanting to be accepted, and sometimes we sacrifice who we are just to make sure our family's going to be safe or our family's going to be okay.
My name is Imtiaz Hafid. I'm a coordinator of Salamat, which is a queer Muslim group affiliated with Al-Fatiha Foundation. We had a queer Muslim workshop today at Lotus Roots, which was well attended. We also had a queer spiritualities workshop, which was even better attended. And it's really interesting that queer Asians are trying to find sort of a spiritual connection and also connecting with their roots, which is what Lotus Roots is about, in terms of their spiritual roots.
Today I went to Transnavigating workshop in the morning, and I just finished a Jealousy workshop. Both of them, you know, we touched on a lot of subjects, but not enough time. But certainly, you know, there were feelings and emotions in the workshops when, for example, one of the presenters, she was saying, you know, the struggle that we go through as we transform. And she said her mother was present in the workshop. So everybody just looked and, a lot of people started crying.
Today I went to Delectable Diva Dykes. It was really good. It was about using more seductive or sexual language more normally.
I went to the slam poetry workshop as well, which was really interesting.
Did you say anything nice about me in the poem?
No.
Oh.
It wasn't about you at all.
Saturday night, Lotus Roots featured another evening of high-caliber performances, ranging from modern dance and Bollywood drag to the duo of Eileen Kage and Alison Nishihara, who performed movements of the Kachaturian Sonata arranged for piano and taiko. The evening was hosted by drag king Jimmy Sushil.
What this conference has done for Jimmy, other than introduce me to lots of lovely dames, it's helping me to get in touch with my feminine side. I am not afraid of the feminine. And I've got this little song to prove it.
What do you think of the conference so far?
It's excellent. Like, I'm from Toronto, and one of the things that we actually don't see is this type of organizing with this many East and Southeast Asians together and South Asians together. So it's quite revolutionary.
Oh, I just enjoy like meeting other queer Asians and just being in a space with so many queer Asians. In Vancouver there's a lot of Asian people, but you don't know where the queer Asian people are. So it's nice to be able to be around other people and be both things at once and not just either queer or Asian, but both. So that's nice.
It doesn't happen very often, so that's probably what makes this extra special, and particularly because it is saved for Asian queers. And that space really creates a whole new level of intense and emotional, great, great stuff that can come of it.
Lotus Roots wrapped up on the Sunday night with a dance at the Lotus nightclub. And everyone went away, hoping it would happen again soon. For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambage, Rex Walkner, Joe Resch, and Heather Kitching contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KVSC St. Cloud, Minnesota, 4CCR Cairns, Queensland, WGDR Plainfield, Vermont, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.